jina magrita ġuż, nsemmilkom u nilqakom għal-programm ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. Tiftakru meta konna qegħdin nitkellmu fuq l-aħwa Grimm u l-ħrejjef li kitbu dwar il-lut? Konna semmejna l-infani Levald u konna etna li kienet Ludija u konna semmejna wkoll x'kienet qalet dwar id-diskriminazzjoni lejn il-lut. Tant kien hekk li Fani kellha tibdel ir-reliġjon tagħha għal dik Protestanta. Da kollu biex tiġi aċċettata. Issa diġà l-fatt li kienet mara kien żvantaġġ fit-18-il seklu, aħseb wara tkun tippratika r-reliġjoni Ebrajka. Fani Levald kienet tgħix fil-vant tal-Prussja bejn l-1811 u l-1889. Kienet ġejja minn familja benestanti Ludija. Fani kienet membru importanti ta' Salonier ta' Berlin, kellha l-qalba d-drittijiet tal-mara. U kitbet kemm kitbiet autobiografiċi li fil-fatt illum se nsemmgħulkom ħafna minnhom, kif ukoll novelli u ħrejjef. Għalbidu dit tippubblika anonimament. U sqarret hekk dwar il-kitba tagħha u dwar ħajjitha. For years I had lived in the belief that I was an old maid, and therefore without any expectations of happiness and good fortune. Now I began to tell myself that I was a young writer, that I had a father who was fairly affluent, and good siblings, that I possessed loyal friends, and a talent I enjoyed using, which promised to provide me with a certain independence, and had a goal before me I was pursuing with enthusiasm and ambition. The more often I repeated this to myself, the firmer my belief in my blessings grew, and my belief not only made me happy, it made me strong. Missiera kien għena ħafna biex tikseb l-indipendenza tagħha, għaliex dawk iż-żminijiet it-tfajliet kienu qishom il-proprjetà tal-ġenituri li kienu jiddisponu minnhom kif kien jaqbilhom. U Fani Levald tajt hekk. He gave me a totally free rein of everything, hawnhekk qed tirreferi dejjem għall-missiera. From the moment he granted me the right to fulfill my profession independently and to go my own way, he gave me complete freedom and recognized me as a force, as a person with equal rights, which he had to value and respect, even if I was his child. U bl-istess mod kien itratta r-raġel tagħha Adolf Starr. My husband's free and noble character also granted me a similar respect for my personal freedom later. Għalkemm Fani Levald kienet ivvantaġġjata ħafna meta mqabla ma' nies oħrajn, xorta tammetti li sofriet minħabba s-soċjetà tat-19-il seklu li kienet ħares lejn l-indipendenza tal-mara b'suspett. We all suffered, I directly and my family indirectly, from the false morality which still exists, condemning middle-class daughters past the years of childhood and youth to a useless existence within the bounds of the family, even if they have long outgrown them and are ripe enough in every respect for an independent life and action. Mhux taf xej li Fani Levald ħasset li kellha tagħmel minn kollox biex tiddefendi d-drittijiet tal-mara li dak iż-żmien kienu mkasbrin. U kif se naraw minn din is-silta mill-ktieb Towards Emancipation, German Women Writers of the 19th Century ta' Carol Dieter, Fani Levald sistiet fuq li sistiet biex min kien qed jgħix ħajja żvantaġġjata iqum fuq saqajh. U ma kienx tibża tikkritika s-soċjetà ta' nisa sofistikati li wkoll kienet titħallat magħhom u tajt hekk. Fani did not just fight exclusively for women, but for the unfortunate or downtrodden of either sex. However, women tended to be more disadvantaged than men once they were destitute, especially if they had the care of children. She was strenuously in favor of women being allowed to work and thus achieve independence if necessary. She was in favor of state help for the setting up of such institutions as refuge shelters for women in towns and was the member of a committee which set up one such shelter in January 1869. She was in favour of education for women, in particular poor women and women in service, and helped to set up educational societies for servant girls. She berated wealthy women for their vanity and love of show, which set such a bad example to their servants, and said it was in their own interest to change. If we want to produce a healthy atmosphere, which means that our servants leave our homes as industrious girls to take their place as well-behaved women in the world of work, then above all, we ourselves and our daughters must behave well. Fanny Levald also supported the communal kitchen, but also remained a bourgeois feminist who supported marriage and family life. In general, Fanny Levald's ultimate desire was for people, not just women, to be happy. And for that, they had to be educated. Issa minħabba li n-nisa ma kellhomx l-istess opportunitajiet tal-irġiel biex jirċievu edukazzjoni xierqa, Fanny Levald għamlet is-setat tul ħajjitha kollha biex tagħmel pressjoni fuq l-awtoritajiet. Kienu jirreferu għalija bħala il-feminista prussjana u kienet ukoll attiva politikament bħala membru tal-Junges Deutschland li wara kollox kien moviment mhux biss politiku iżda wkoll letterarju. Dan il-moviment kien jikkritika żwiġijiet arranġati mill-ġenituri, id-divorzju u s-sitwazzjoni soċjali legali u edukattiva tal-mara. Fanny tiktab ukoll fit-tul dwar ir-revoluzzjoni tal-1848 u tajtek. After all, it consists of a responsible ministers who are only carrying out the orders of the king they represent. This is our constitutionalism. This government seems like a false-hearted lover to me. Għalkemm Fanny kienet tara r-Repubblika bħala soluzzjoni għall-Ġermanja, iżda ma tantx kellha fidi li se tagħtisseħħ u għalhekk kienet ħares lejn Bismarck bħala s-Salvatur. Iżda tajjeb issa li nisimgħu silta miħrafa ta' Fanny Levald A Modern Fairy Tale. Waraw daqsxejn minn fejn nibtet l-idea ta' din il-ħrafa. Isimgħu x'qalet Fanny Levald. Its source was a conversation I had sometime earlier. The discussion had concerned the similarity that the upper facial features of some people had with those of animals. We had looked around to see who fit this idea and had then moved on to the concept of the migration of souls. I wondered to myself if the external resemblance to an animal would be reflected in the inside of a person, and how there were probably a considerable number of people whose uncultivated instincts would make them closer to animals than educated human beings. U fil-fatt hawnhekk, din il-ħrafa, A Modern Fairy Tale, tqabbel żewġ irġiel ma' żewġ ħutiet. U waraw daqsxejn kemm issir surreali din il-ħrafa. In our family, we had an old unmarried aunt who was said to have been very beautiful and to have had hundreds of suitors, at least according to all the other mothers in the family, but she had turned down even the most prestigious offers of marriage. That seemed to us young girls a complete puzzlement. And if any of the older women added, "Aunt Renata's fate has been strange, and she's a Sunday's child," then the curiosity with which we watched Renata was at its peak, and only the mysterious sound of the words "Sunday's child" kept us from delving deeper into the secret. When a girl was to get married, Aunt Renata was always consulted, and her opinion often determined if the union took place. That was more than enough to instill reverent terror in us. You could never know how soon you yourself might be in the situation of trembling before Aunt Renata's pronouncements. I was the youngest girl in the family, and probably didn't have to worry yet about anyone asking for my hand, but dear sweet Renata inspired even in me a vague feeling of awe, besides a certain warm affection. I found everything about her terribly attractive. Her stateliness, her aristocratic nose, her clear, dispassionate gaze, and above all, her determined, no-nonsense mouth with its classically beautiful lips. In addition, the odd, slightly nun-like garb and small lace bonnet she wore looked as proper as they were plain on her. And I pictured that Aunt Renata had never been anything other than eternally 50 years old, and that she'd been born in that black dress. When I also considered that I was born on Sunday, and therefore also a Sunday's child, it all became very eerie, and I would have loved to have known what it all meant. 100 times over that question hovered on my lips when I was alone with Aunt Renata, but I could never find the courage actually to ask. I was about 15 when they began to take me along to get-togethers. Although I had to play the unenviable part of a small fry, as adolescent girls were inexplicably called in jest. Once at the beginning of winter, all of the high society who had returned from their country estates and the spas gathered at my grandmother's house, and there was talk that a few foreigners were spending the winter in Berlin were going to be introduced. There was music, people played cards, and the young people wandered about the various rooms in a fashion that is only possible at the start of winter, before the various cliques have formed and little intrigues have begun. Suddenly, the doors opened, and our cousin Franz entered the room with 2 very handsome men. One, in a dashing foreign service uniform, was introduced as Baron von Salmon. The other, in elegant civilian attire, as Assessor Pike. Aunt Renata praised the wonders of Berlin to them. Baron von Salmon was anxious to meet Berlin's famous men, particularly the literary ones, and soon they were discussing the latest works of literature, especially one book that contained a long discussion about the transmigration of souls.
"So you consider the transmigration of souls akin to a fairy tale, Baron," Renata finally said. "But I have my own views. I, too, am very far from believing that any old gallant cavalier or beautiful princess could suddenly be transformed into a lion or a little bird. To what purpose? But isn't it possible that it could work the other way round? There, I am not so certain."
Assessor Pike seemed displeased with the turn the conversation had taken, and particularly with the discussion of the transmigration of souls. He had tried repeatedly to change the subject, but when my aunt began to explain her opinion in more detail, he practically heaved his chair to the side and left the room. Baron von Salmon seemed to disapprove of that immensely.
"But surely you don't believe, madam," he said, "that there are, in truth, creatures able to change their form whenever they please?"
"Not whenever they please, but I do believe that a high power may often so ordain it."
"But do you believe it is possible that a human could be condemned to a life as an animal?"
"Oh, heaven forbid. That would be regression in nature, where such things are impossible. But I firmly believe that animals have a soul similar to ours, and that this soul can, for a short period of time, leave its body and enter another human one." Everyone in the room fell silent. I felt anxious because it seemed to me I was on the verge of discovering some dark secret, and I decided to put the puzzle together right away at any cost. With a pounding heart, I stole after Aunt Renata.
"I was just thinking of you, my dear, and I'm so pleased that you have come. I have to talk to you. Sit down next to me and listen."
I did as she said, and she began.
"The two of us, my dear Bertha, are companions in suffering, if I may put it that way. We're both Sunday's children, and that's why I consider it my duty to tell you about my past and to share my experiences with you, so that you might be spared the suffering that made my life a misery. For centuries, people, vaguely aware of these truths, had believed that the human spirit could be banished to the body of an animal. But that is lunacy. Everything in the world is progressing. That is why things may only evolve to higher beings, and that's why it is possible that the spirit of an animal can appear in human form, but not the other way around. The transformation happens only temporarily, unless the transformed animal succeeds in winning the first love of a human heart. But let me get back to my fate. When I was about 18 years old, the time of the wars with the French, Colonel Belagle came to our house. His bravery was known everywhere. His proud character and flattering ways only towards women attracted me to him, and he wooed me from the first moment we met. During the calm that ensued after our official engagement, I began to have second thoughts about our relationship. I began to notice that we didn't understand one another at all. In my heart's desperation, I turned to God and asked him to stand by me and show me a way out of the situation, if that were possible. After this prayer, I fell asleep and dreamt that my long-lost nursemaid came to me, took me to her quarters at the cloister, and let me rummage through her old trunks and closets, as I had sometimes done as a child. I soon found an old hymnal in which the Lord was pictured as an old man with a crown, as well as some small faded shoes and pinafores I had worn as a child. In short, everything was there just as it had been when I had visited her the last time. She also showed me a book of spells and dreams, and I recommended I seek help in them whenever I was in difficulty. I had actually received it as a gift from the old woman, and had put it away without looking at it. I found something that took me aback. A girl born on the spring equinox that falls on a Sunday may experience wondrous things when the equinox and the girl's birthday once again coincide on a Sunday. If she is aflame in love and unhappy, so she should stand at a crossroads at noon and take careful note of what she sees. Let her not tell of it, however, if she values her life, except to warn someone in her family in the same situation, because an overabundance of knowledge produces headaches. At first it all seemed like complete nonsense to me, but then I thought, what if there are things between heaven and earth that our philosophers can't even imagine? Besides that, my birthday, the 22nd of March, was in a few days, and on a Sunday. What harm could there be in happening to stroll along Frederick Street and waiting for the clock to toll 12 times where two streets intersect? Curiosity, a sense of adventure, and above all, inner turmoil, drove me to the attempt because I was very unhappy. Enough said, I went. The weather was lovely, and I crossed a number of streets with a pounding heart, because by now I was completely convinced that something unusual was going to happen to me. The clock tolled 12. The first 6 tolls had not even died away when I suddenly felt I was bewitched. I saw a lady with a bird's head, later a man pass by with a physiognomy that was unmistakably feline. Then I saw someone stride by blithely while the angel of death floated overhead. I took leave of my senses, and as if whipped by the furies, I hurried home, shuddering at the thought of seeing my family again. Pale as death, I entered the living room and was overjoyed to see my parents and family members in their beloved and familiar forms coming towards me. But the terrible secret had been revealed to me too abruptly. My body succumbed to the terrible bewitchment, and a few hours later, when Belagle came over, I lay in violent hallucinations. The doctor declared it was the start of a brain fever. Belagle, about whom I had been babbling the whole time, demanded to see me, and they humored him because they hoped his presence would calm me. But the moment I saw him, I cried out wildly. My betrothed was a huge eagle whose eyes glowed hideously and who seemed about to devour me. "Save me, save me," I cried. "Get that eagle out of here, or I'll die." My mother thought it a new fever hallucination brought on by my sick mind. Belagle, however, became deathly pale and left the room. A long time passed, about which I remember nothing, because I was either delirious from fever or unconscious. When I finally regained consciousness, the image of Belagle, turning into a mighty eagle, hung before my eyes, and I could not bring myself to ask about my betrothed although I felt an empty space in my heart and a deathly chill that almost killed me. My parents also avoided mentioning the past until I was almost fully recuperated. Then they told me that on the very evening that I was taken ill, the colonel had written a quick note in which he announced he would leave immediately to attend to pressing matters, but that the length of the journey was yet undetermined. No salutations to me, no mention of the past, no hope for a joyful future. My parents couldn't make sense of it and searched in vain for information from the colonel's superiors, who were just as astonished about his sudden disappearance and ascribed it to a mysterious misfortune. Only I understood and knew everything. Of course, I had paid for this insight with my peace of mind. Aunt Renata fell silent, and a long pause ensued. I shuddered with fear, and a premonition of the disaster that would have befallen me suddenly welled up in me. My aunt pulled me over to her, kissed me, and heaved a great sigh. Then she held me as one holds a child on her lap and continued, "Do you, dear Bertha, still remember the evening when Baron von Salmon and Assessor Pike were introduced into our circle? I'll never forget my horror as I watched them enter the room, and I saw them as two fish. I thought of the misfortune that could once again plague our family. In growing fear, I watched their attentiveness towards you and your complete ingenuousness. For a long time, I felt compelled to tell you all this, but it was possible that you would be indifferent toward the two, and that I didn't want to destroy your blissful innocence unnecessarily. Forgive me, my dear child, if I offend your sensibilities. But it seems to me that for a number of days you were not entirely indifferent toward the dashing Baron von Salmon. You, my dear child, my poor Sunday's child, you shall never become the prey of one of those subhumans. You shall never experience the world in that naked, icy reality that freezes a warm heart." And once again, Aunt Renata fell silent. Later, when we were alone, she said to me, "Baron von Salmon seemed displeased about your departure, but I told him to consider that, at this time of year, when all the ice has melted away and the flowers are blooming and the waters flowing again, he and his friend must also find the residence tiresome. I strongly encouraged him to leave Berlin and go to the seashore or back to their homeland, which they, curiously, had never mentioned. Von Salmon became very alarmed because he probably suspected his secret was out. He explained that he and Assessor Pike had already decided to take a trip to the North Sea via Hamburg, and that they were planning to take their leave of us today, since they would be leaving Berlin at the break of dawn tomorrow."
Kif rajtu f'din ir-rafa jissem maż-żwieġ u fil-fatt kif diġa semmejna Fanny Levalt kienet iż-żewġet lil Adolf Starr li id-divorzja ħafna żmien wara u iż-żewġu. Dan hu li kellha xi tgħid dwar iż-żwieġ. "I do not hate marriage, quite the contrary. I have much respect for it, but I'm afraid I would degrade it and myself at the same time if I joined in such a sacred union without being committed to it. What can be more satisfying than to live your life with your beloved, to take care of him, to share his joys and sorrows? That is why I cannot bear the thought of an indifferent marriage." And so it happened. The next morning we received their farewell cards. Their "pour prendre congé" brought me to tears. I felt very strange and was dizzy again, like someone who has been pulled back from a precipice in the nick of time, but recalling the danger, experiences the vertigo again. Those were awful days. But my good aunt helped me through it all, and she and my mother, who knew as much as she needed to know about the secret, made preparations the next day for our journey. With the shopping, packing, leave-taking, and anticipation of all the things that were awaiting me on my first excursion, I found no time to contemplate the past. The trip and the stay at the spa completely distracted me, since the impression that the Baron had made on me was really only a fleeting one. And after my return, I made the acquaintance of my present husband, in whom I possess an honest, complete, and wonderful person. Even Aunt Renata finds him absolutely magnificent. The past has retreated completely into the background, so that the episode with Assessor Pike and Baron von Salmon often seems to me like a dream, or a fairy tale, although not more than 3 years have passed since this escapade. Nittama l-program tal-lum oġobkom, u l-ġimgħa d-dieħla se nkomplu nitkellmu dwar dawn in-nisa Ġermaniżi kittieba, u se nitkellmu dwar din il-kittieba anonima li mill-istil u kontenut tal-ħrafa waslu għal konklużjoni li din inkitbet minn mara. U permezz tal-ħrafa The Red Flower, se taraw kif beda jibbaqbaq id-dem ta' segwaċi ta' Karl Marx. Insiru nafu kif il-famuż kindergarten it-tfal tagħna illum jattendu mingħajr tfixkil kien assoċjat ma' gruppi politiċi sovversivi u wara ftit żmien fil-fatt ingħalqu. F'kelma waħda permezz ta' ħrafa se ninvestigaw x'kienet jiġri fil-Prussja mill-1840 sal-aħħar ta' 19-il seklu. Mela tinsewx terġaw tingħaqdu miegħi ma' Gita Juice għall-programm ieħor il-ħrejjef l-erf u l-maġija. U sadak it-tant jiena Magrita Juice insemmilkom.